Hello and welcome to this bonus episode from episode 200. So normally I do a synopsis of some of the key points from the previous episode, but today I'm doing something a little bit different, and it's additional content that myself and Bhushan recorded together. So I wanted to split the podcast into two. It's all about how to advocate for women, especially as a man, how to advocate for women in the workplace. And I know Bhushan is particularly good at this, and it's why I wanted to talk to him about it. So I really hope you enjoy today's slightly different bonus episode, but very special because it's related to episode 200. If you haven't listened to the full episode, definitely go and check that out. And I really hope you enjoy today's episode. Do feel free to connect with me. All of my links are on happieratwork.ie, and I look forward to connecting with you and hearing what you think about today's episode. We talked again before we started recording about this idea of allyship and providing allyship specifically for women in the workplace. So maybe as a man, talk me through how you go about doing that, and maybe some advice for women if they're looking to get sponsorship or if they're looking to find a male ally.
Yeah, I think allyship is really important. I like the word advocacy. I think that we really need to kind of find, and whether it's women or whether it's people who are refugees, or people who are the first in their family to go to college, or you know, people who are just from a different socioeconomic background, we all need people in organizations who can advocate for us, advocate for us in the rooms that we're not in, kind of take a leap of faith on us and support us in kind of good times and tough times. And so when I look at successful diverse candidates in organizations and the people that kind of rise to, you know, very impactful roles, again, whether they're women or whether they're people of color or kind of different, you know, diverse by socioeconomic, there's always a few people behind them that have been allies or really big advocates for them, that have pounded the table, that have put their political capital at risk to say, Aoife's brilliant. She may not be ready for this role right now, but we need to give her a stretch opportunity, or we need to accommodate the fact that she needs more flexibility than someone else right now. And we also need to kind of just straight out call out bad behavior. If we're putting standards on diverse candidates that we wouldn't expect of, say, male candidates, or if there's issues that you can, you know, you can't change because, you know, let's think about like post-maternity leave. And the return back to the workplace, there's obviously a whole set of physical and emotional challenges that has for women that are different for men, even though we have paternity leave. So we just need to kind of advocate. We need to kind of call out bad behavior. And if we're ever going to get to gender equity, gender parity, we're going to have to think and work differently around this topic.
Yeah. And is one of the things, and I see this in relation to culture specifically as well, this idea of calling out the bad behavior, like how does that materialize in the workplace from what you've seen, or like just the actually calling it out, like being aware of it and then, you know, pulling someone aside and having a word, whatever that might look like?
It takes courage in an organization, again, whether you're an entry level or whether you're a senior leader, to call out somebody's biases, to challenge someone in terms of how they've delivered feedback, even if that person's very successful in an organization and is a great trader or a great salesperson or a great business manager, it takes a lot of courage because nobody likes kind of direct feedback. But what we've got to do in organizations, the theory's easy. We can talk about creating an environment. We could talk about psychological safety. Adam Grant is one of the best people that talks about all of the tricks around this. But it really starts with individuals, just like they would in their personal lives, just having zero tolerance to certain words, certain microaggressions, certain sexism, racism, prejudice in a workplace. And it also takes something for leaders or colleagues to actually say, I need to listen. Because some of this is, it could be misintended. It could be just that people are just misinformed, that they make They make a comment, they make a joke, they kind of stretch the boundaries of their role. And so some of it is when we are in those positions, we need to kind of actually listen to others that are giving us this feedback. I'm sure we'll get onto this topic, but right now, this topic around DEI is a bit of a culture war.
Yes.
And right now, because in the US, especially, when we say DEI, people are kind of, you know, I've heard this term, DEI is dead. I've heard the term that, you know, ESG is no longer a big focus. Firms are walking back their commitments around DEI. And what we really need to do is organizations need to pick the few things that they're going to be very steadfast and committed to and just continue that path. So if gender focus, or if in the US kind of focus on, you know, African-American representation in organizations is a focus, we need to continue that. And we need to kind of, organizations need to push forward to that in spite of kind of what's talked about kind of, you know, on social media or by certain very vocal business people or politicians, et cetera. But it's a challenge right now, and it's a really misunderstood topic. And my personal concern is this, when we say, you know, DEI is not a focus anymore, or people are walking back their commitments, you know, post the murder of George Floyd, it gives people who are closet intolerant, people that want to go back to an older way of working, a less equitable way of working, etc., it gives them the opportunity, whether it's in business or in life, to kind of be emboldened and kind of share those views. And it can manifest in less opportunities for women, less opportunities for minorities, less immigration, and kind of more divisiveness and polarization in society. So that's something that I think we all have to kind of do our part on.
Yeah, it's knowing what you stand for and committing to that. Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm only seeing the kind of the headlines from what's coming in the US. I haven't seen anything from Europe just yet, but it is interesting how it's unfolding. And certainly the people who I'm connected with on my social media channels are talking about how it's terrible that this is happening. Like, I haven't seen one person saying, oh, isn't this a brilliant move, and it's definitely what's needed, you know, all of these kinds of things. I'd love to know if so most of the listeners are women. So if any of the women who are listening today want to know, how do they go about making those connections and having someone who is going to advocate for them in the room where they are not?
The first thing is, in an organization, is find out those people who historically have been good male allies. So people in organizations know who they are. They'll know that, you know, that these individuals have supported women or minorities kind of in the past, and they're the real deal. Or these are the people that will talk about it publicly, but personally, they will not put their political capital on, you know, at risk for you.
Yeah.
Or they won't spend time with you. They'll tell you what you want to hear, but they're kind of paying lip service. So find the people that are authentically in your organization doing it and taking action, and get feedback from other female colleagues. And then the most important thing is have a conversation with someone and actually ask them. And whether it's a senior male leader, or it could be a senior female leader, because females, you know, developing females is really important as well, is ask someone to say, I would love to be, would it be possible that we could have a coaching relationship? Could we get 30 minutes every quarter where, you know, I can kind of share what I'm doing and I can get your feedback? It could be more, it could be less, etc. But it's literally just asking and kind of setting up the parameters and the boundaries of that. It's always easier if it's someone in your organization, because they understand the culture, they can actually have real impact. Although a lot of people do use outside, you know, people who are external to the organization as mentors, because either they've worked in that industry or they have a set of experience, et cetera. But it starts with like picking the right people, asking people, and then just making it a two-way relationship.
Yeah.
The mentoring that I do for people, I learn so much about, you know, working with younger people, working with people who grow up with different backgrounds to me. And so there's a huge benefit, but not everyone's going to be a good mentor or a good ally. And, you know, there's a responsibility you have, you know, when you're being mentored as well, to kind of make sure that you show up, that you ask the right questions, that you seek out the right advice, you take action where you can, and you take personal accountability.
Yeah, brilliant. Love that. Really, really great advice. And knowing that it is that two-way relationship, I think, is really important. And just not being afraid to ask that question in the first place to make things happen, because there's probably people listening who are intimidated, or they're afraid to even ask or to reach out to someone. But it's a case of just doing it anyway. Even if you feel afraid to do it, just do it. Any parting words of wisdom before we wrap things up?
We have 4.2 billion people going to the polls in different elections around the world. It's going to be a turbulent year. There's going to be lots of rhetoric. There's going to be lots of disinformation. There's going to be lots of polarization. We've talked about this in the past, but one of the scariest things for me is the world seems to be more splintered. Ian Bremner is a great political economist. If you don't follow, he calls this a G0. He basically says that, you know, whether it's US, China, different parts of the Middle East, we're all kind of working separate. I also see that within countries. You know, the US has a polarized society based on politics and socioeconomics. We have class wars around things like ESG and DEI. And so my advice is that, you know, we've all got to get through this set of election years, but there's going to be some ebbs and flows. There's going to be some polarization. The economy is looking like it's going to soften. We're seeing less and less kind of discretionary spend from companies. And even though we do have tight labor markets, there's still this messy transition of this skills mismatch we talked about, because AI is going to impact, if you look at the IMF stats, it's going to impact 60% of roles in some shape or form in the developed world and 40% in the developing world. So we've all got to kind of hunker down and kind of manage the polarization, focus on our jobs, focus on our families, our economy, but also kind of understand that this is an election year and there'll be lots of news flying around for various reasons. Mm-hmm. And we've all got to get through 2024 to get to the other side.
Yeah, brilliant. And I suppose it's know the source of the information that you're reading and do your own reading and maybe mute a few things on social media if they're starting to get on top of you or annoy you, and also be open to other people's opinions as well.
Absolutely. I double click on the last one, just being open to like diverse perspectives. Mm. You know, start following a few people on your social media that actually have different views to you, because you'll learn. You don't have to agree with their views, but it's really good to understand arguments and perspectives from all sides, whether it's about, you know, a terrible war conflict, whether it's about a social issue, whether it's about politics or even your company's policies.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. I absolutely thoroughly enjoyed this conversation today, as I always do. I really, really appreciate your time. So thank you for taking some time out. The question I ask everyone who comes on the podcast is, what does being happier at work mean to you?
For me, being happier at work is working on projects with clients where I can actually see the end results. Mm. You know, I can see their employees being happier or their skills being developed. I can see the company achieve the financial results that they're setting out to achieve, or they're optimizing the investments in the technology that they've procured. So it's really seeing the outcomes.
Brilliant, love that.
And it goes without saying, Aoife, also congratulations on episode 200. That's a phenomenal achievement, highly exciting. I'm sure there'll be lots of fanfare and promotion of that, but I remember 100, I remember 150, but yeah, 200 is just incredible.
Yeah. It's from humble beginnings and here I am. I definitely didn't think back when I was recording episode one, I wasn't thinking about episode 200 at that stage, but lots of learnings along the way, and I will share the learnings in one of the episodes around 200, so either 199 or 201. I will definitely be sharing some of the learnings along the way of that. But thank you so much for your time today. Really, really appreciate it. And hopefully we can catch up again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
That was another episode of the Happier at Work podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to tune in today, and I really hope today's episode resonated with you. If you did enjoy today's episode, I'd love for you to take a couple of minutes or even a couple of seconds to leave a rating or a review on your favorite podcast platform. It really does mean the world to me. As always, if you want to connect with me, you'll find all of my links on the website happieratwork.ie. Those of you who've been with us for a while know that we've been partnering with Skilding. And the most recent evolution of this is something I really, really get behind. I really, really love this idea. We are bringing you together a set of curated episodes from the podcast specifically to do with women in leadership. They've been carefully chosen to empower you to become the leader you are supposed to be. But it's different from a normal course that you might take. It's like a mini course. Most courses would give you a content to consume, but by partnering with Skilding, we're giving you the tools to take action. So that's either by yourself or as part of a supportive community, along with me offering advice and encouragement if you want it. You can find out more about this mini course by visiting skilding.com/happier. That's skill, skillding.com/happier.